Blog Talk Radio.
Having a good Memorial Day?
We just finished cooking out. I put the vacuum hoses on my mom's car and partially took mine apart so I could get the transmission in as soon as possible when we get it.
Oh, yeah, I heard you went to catch you at Auto Parts yesterday and did some work out there.
They had one out in Petersburg, so I went on out there and checked it to make sure it was a manual, and they're going to pull it for me and hopefully have it ready by Tuesday.
Awesome. Maybe get yourself back on the road again.
Heck yeah, man. I'm not making any money.
Do what?
I said, heck yeah, man, because I'm not making any money.
Yeah, it sucks being stuck in the house. I know that, man. I went to my grandma's house today and watched war movies with her. Do you have, like, on American movie classics, I guess? They've got all those John Wayne movies, like The Longest Day, and, you know. So I watched that with her, and then I ended up washing her windows outside.
Okay.
Now and washing the windowsills. Had full of pollen and stuff. So now my hands feel like Pine Sol. That's always a good
nice.
Show. But I was thinking, since it's Memorial Day, we should definitely take time to remember why we celebrate it. Give thanks to the men and women who have served and who have defended our rights and liberties and gave the ultimate sacrifice. So from the Fast Radio team, we want to say thank you very much to everyone who has served, who are still around, those who have passed on, and we really appreciate all you've done for us.
I definitely concur with that. I know I have a couple of friends, Army and Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
I thank them every day that I talk to them for their services that they do and the fact that they keep us safe and protect our freedoms.
Yes, I actually downloaded MP3 at 4A for this moment, so I'm going to play it for us right now, okay?
All right.
You see that? I want you to remember that no bastard ever won war by dying for his country. He won it by making the other poor dumb bastard die for his country. And then all this stuff you've heard about America not wanting to fight, wanting to stay out of the war, is a lot of horse dung. Americans traditionally love to fight. All real Americans love the sting of battle. When you were kids, you all admired the champion marble shooter, the fastest runner, big league ball players, the toughest boxers. Americans love a winner and will not tolerate a loser. Americans play to win all the time. I wouldn't give a hoot in hell for a man who lost and laughed. That's why Americans have never lost and will never lose a war. Because the very thought of losing is hateful to Americans. Now, an army is a team. It lives, eats, sleeps, fights as a team. This individuality stuff is a bunch of crap. The bilious bastards who wrote that stuff about individuality for the Saturday Evening Post don't know anything more about real battle than they do about fornicating. Now, we have the finest food and equipment, the best spirit, and the best men in the world. You know, my God, I actually pity those poor bastards we're going up against. By God, I do. We're not just going to shoot the bastards. We're going to cut out their living guts and use them to grease the treads of our tanks. We're going to murder those lousy Hun bastards by the bushel. Now, some of you boys, I know, are wondering whether or not you'll chicken out under fire. Don't worry about it. I can assure you that you will all do your duty. The Nazis are the enemy. Wade into them. Spill their blood. Shoot them in the belly. When you put your hand into a bunch of goo that a moment before was your best friend's face, you know what to do. Now, there's another thing I want you to remember. I don't want to get any messages saying that we are holding our position. We're not holding anything. Let the Hun do that. We are advancing constantly, and we're not interested in holding on to anything except the enemy. We're going to hold on to him by the nose, and we're going to kick him in the ass. We're going to kick the hell out of him all the time, and we're going to go through him like crap through a goose. Now, there's one thing that you men will be able to say when you get back home, and you may thank God for it. 30 years from now, when you're sitting around your fireside with your grandson on your knee, and he asks you, what did you do in the great World War II? You won't have to say, well, I shoveled shit in Louisiana. All right, now you sons of bitches, you know how I feel.
So that was a little bit of Patton for you guys. Thought it was a good tribute there.
Reggie, what's calling it, Bob?
Do what?
Sorry, it was my mom in the background. We have a cat walking in the water tub.
I was like, didn't quite understand that. But yeah, we definitely want to make mention of the sacrifices that our troops have made for us, and you know that we're definitely appreciative of all that, of all they've done. You know, so, and I've always liked that speech. I've always enjoyed that.
Very,
so,
very vivid, vivid speech.
Yes. Yes, it's one of those speeches you're like, you hear it, you're like, yeah! Woo! America! Woohoo!
America.
America! Oh, yeah!
Team America.
Team America. Let's see. I think we might have our guest on the other line, Melissa Tanner.
Hi, how are you guys?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty
good.
Ryan.
Good, good.
Hey, Ryan.
And Kristen.
Kristen's
Hi,
here.
Kristen.
How are you?
Good. Can you guys hear me okay?
Oh, we can hear
yeah.
you fine. Can you hear us okay?
Yes, I can. Thank you.
That's awesome. Are you having a good holiday weekend?
I am, very much. How about you guys?
Pretty good, pretty good.
Time started out a little crappy, but it's getting better.
Getting
we got
better
the fire pit going,
end.
So.
Oh, that was fun.
I found a transmission, so.
She's had car problems.
Oh,
what have you done? What did you do this weekend, Melissa?
My niece graduated high school on Saturday, and it was also her 18th birthday, so it was like a
two
for
one.
Oh,
wow, good timing. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That way you'd have to buy like two presents. You like buy one big one, or like, you know.
Right, right.
That's so cool. Well, congratulations
hey,
to her.
Real quick before, I will tell her. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Before we get, I'm getting asked and having people ask me how they listen. What can I provide them so they can jump on and listen real quick?
Oh, they can go to the website or they can dial the same number you called in to listen to the show
okay.
on their phones, on their smartphones.
Okay.
I mean, you can't use like a regular landline phone to listen. I don't think.
Okay.
Dial that 323 number. Do you have it, or do you want me to give it to you again?
Yeah, do you mind just giving it to me again? So 323.
Okay. 323-580-5703.
Okay. Okay, thanks.
And they'll be on, and they can listen to it and stuff. And so that's cool. So you went to a high school graduation, and you went to your niece's birthday party.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty busy weekend.
Yeah.
We had a, like I said, we had a fire pit. We went to our paranormal group. We belonged to a friend's house, and they had a little fireside chat on Saturday night.
So did anybody take any pictures of the fire or smoke at the party?
Oh yeah, I got a picture of the fire pit. I took a picture of it with my phone and put it on Facebook Saturday night. Lots of drinking and talking, you know, having a good time.
Wasn't a lot of drinking. Not as bad as New Year's, but.
I mean, the way I figured, there were a lot of people there, so there was lots of drinking. Maybe not all,
okay.
Not individually, but, you know, I mean, I had one beer, and I was like, I was feeling rough. I wasn't, like, you know, drunk or whatever, but I just felt, like, really tired. Man, wore me out. So I drank a beer,
we're
then I drank VA juice after that. Yeah, I know. I mean, one beer doesn't like mess me up, but I don't know. Maybe it's just like some getting old or whatever. I can't drink like I used to. So, are you the leader of TNT Paranormal, or what is?
Yeah, I'm the lead, but I'm also the founding member. So. I started the group back in December of 2009, and
okay.
So I basically lead all the investigations, and we are actually a limited liability corporation, so I'm technically the owner, so I'm the one that paperwork and all that through the state had to go through and those kind of things.
Oh, all the fun stuff.
Yeah.
Paperwork.
All the
exciting.
Extremely fun stuff, yes.
So how'd you get into this paranormal field?
Well, you know, a lot of people will have, like, that one experience that they had, you know, maybe they saw an apparition or had, you know, a disembodied voice or something, and it really wasn't one thing. I actually grew up in a really small town in Missouri, and the town itself had been a lead mining town, and so we had a lot of old historic, you know, mines still around, buildings and things like that, but also a lot of Civil War battles. Sites were around my hometown. And so when I was a kid, on Sundays after church, my great-grandparents, so yes, I was fortunate enough to still have great-grandparents when I was little.
Wow.
And they would take
That's
us
rare.
Around. Yeah, it is. And they still had a lot of siblings. And so I, as a little kid, was exposed to a lot of these people with a lot of good stories. And so we would drive by like a cemetery and my grandma would tell me a story, you know, about the urban legend types of
mm-hmm.
things. And so it always was kind of there. And I don't know if you guys have heard of the spook light in Joplin, Missouri, but it's a light that no one can come up with a reason why. They've had scientists try to debunk it, and it just appears. And I, in my teenage years, we would go there and see if we could see it. And I actually did get to see it twice, and so it was really kind of cool. And so that interest was always there, but it wasn't something
uh-huh.
like that one thing, you know. And so then after college and stuff like that, I started seeing more shows on TV,
mm-hmm.
like way before Ghost Hunters and stuff. You know, you would see stuff
yeah.
like Scariest Places on Earth, Unsolved Mysteries,
oh,
things
yeah.
like that. And then about the time that Ghost Hunters came about, I was like, you mean there's groups out there that do this kind of thing? And so I started doing research and found one in the area, and I joined it, and I was in that group for a while and then decided to start this one.
Wow.
So it's not like that one exciting, you know, I was tapped on the shoulder kind of thing, but it was kind of like stuff that kind of happened throughout my life that led me here.
See, that's the same. That's how I was. I never had that one big, like, you know, I was visited one night by a spirit, and I needed to know why I was visited or whatever. It's always been kind of in the back of my mind, interest kind of stuff, but like just like you, I didn't know there. I just thought paranormal investigators were just on TV, you know.
Right.
Or, like, if I'd have a TV show or whatever, I couldn't do it, you know. So how many people are in your group?
Right now we have 15, of which only 11 are investigators. So we actually, besides investigators, have data reviewers. So we have people that's all they do for us is data review, and it's mostly because they're not local. I mean, I have team, we're in Illinois, I'm in the Chicago area, but I have data reviewers in Missouri. And so, like, they, you know, I send them the data on it. We actually use thumb drives, and they review it and send me back their notes, and
so.
I check everything out. So it's a little bit of a different concept than some teams have. And so for us, that means a lot of note-taking because I've got people who have never set foot in this building that I got to make sure they can visualize what the room looked like and things like that.
So data is evidence review.
Yeah, we don't call it evidence, and I mean, we can talk about that reason here in a little while if you want. But yeah, we call it data review. And so mainly though, probably for the people that are listening, what they think of evidence. So it's all the audio and video and photos. So we basically try to document in those three arenas, you know, on a more physical level, if you will. And what I typically do is send them data from the same room, and then I actually send them photos of what that room looked like before we started so they can visualize it so they don't think, they don't forget there was like a coat hanging in the corner so it looks like something funny, you know, kind of thing along the way.
Yeah.
And so I try to document that room as a whole, and so then we call it data. Now, if they send me something back that we call them tags, but if they tag something that I actually cross-reference that data with all the other recorders we had going, whether that was video or audio, and then if it looks like it's something that's possibly paranormal, I take it back to the team, and we as a group decide do we feel it's paranormal or not, and then only at that point would we just deem it paranormal related. And we still try to stay away from the term evidence only because you and I both know what we know today could be disproven tomorrow because things change all the time in this field. So we try to like basically say that it's data pointing towards something paranormal happened, and it's only because it's so hard. Evidence has seemed so concrete, and we have had things that we take back to the client and like, oh, no, that's what this sounds like, or, oh, I recognize that, it's this. And so then we have been able to throw some things out after we've actually gone back and show it to the client. And so, yeah, we use the word data.
Well, that makes sense because it's always a possibility. It's never really concrete. It's always just possible, never really, like, you know, stuff that you think is paranormal today is a bang, oh, that's just something else. Oh, okay. So good to keep it open, like an open-ended thing, so you're not, like, just totally sure it's paranormal.
Right. And we try, I mean, like, we will tell our clients that we believe this is pointing towards the paranormal because we tried to disprove it or we tried to debunk it and we could not. And here's the reasons why. And we put that all in the report we give back to them of the things we did try to do to disprove it or to support a claim they had. And so then kind of letting them make the decision of do they want another investigation to see if we can capture more data to, you know, maybe back up a claim, or are they comfortable that they're not going crazy now because we've been able to show them these three things, you know, disproven or rational reasons why versus, I mean, you guys have done this long enough that you probably have had things that seems paranormal at the time, but you were able to go in and go, oh, it was just a faulty lock, and that's why this lock kept, you know, locking on the door every time someone walked out or things like that.
Yeah, we've gone through, we've had that stuff before, for sure.
And, you know, besides, you haven't asked me yet, but I can just tell you a little bit more about us if you don't mind. We focus a lot more on client investigations than PAVE events or known haunts. So clients actually come to us with claims that we, you know, document in writing. And then we try to come up with scenarios that we might be able to prove or disprove or document something paranormal that happened at that moment, you know, when those things happen.
Yeah.
And so with that adds a little bit of a different complexity than when you're doing a known haunt because we actually have somebody that we have to take data back to. So I don't know if you guys do a lot of client investigations, but it does take it to a different level. You know, you've got to document things a little bit more strenuously than if you were just going to, like, Waverly Hills Sanatorium, you know, and doing an investigation for fun kind of thing. We do a handful of fun things. We actually call them paravans. Uh-huh. We're doing a paravan in July. And what it basically means is we hit more than one location in a certain amount of time. So actually this year we're trying to kill ourselves because we're actually doing 5 investigations in 6 days. And so
it's like a marathon right there.
It totally is. And what we try to do is coordinate this trip so that they're all about an hour or two apart. So so we're not driving 8 hours and then investigating. We're going to try and, you know, we investigate, get up, drive an hour or two, have a few hours before the next investigation, investigate, get some sleep, you know, and kind of just keep repeating it. And we're going to start down in Alton, Illinois, and work our way back up here towards Chicago. And so we do that once a year where we pick a handful of places. And then we also do a handful of events that are for a location where they're hoping to generate more revenue to keep the doors open, where we are the host team where people pay to investigate with us because they may not have an opportunity to do this on their own because they don't have the equipment or they don't have a team behind them. They might just be a lone person that loves to do this, but they don't really want to join a team for whatever reason. And so we do a handful of those events a year to help out locations. And so that's kind of the things we focus on. Another big piece is education. So if you're interested, I can tell you more about that. But we try to educate the public as well as our clients a lot. And we spend a lot of time doing this. I'm sure you guys have seen from the stuff, you know, on the Internet. We also publish a newsletter, and I can tell you guys more about that.
I go on your Facebook page all the time. So, yeah. I definitely like to read articles you share. I share a bunch of the articles you put on there with our group.
Oh, well, great. And we appreciate that.
Well, no, I appreciate you putting them on. Kristen, you still there?
I'm still here. Oh, I'm sorry. Listening. I was enraptured.
I don't want to be asking all the questions here.
Oh, Red Bull must love you guys during that week where you're going to, like, 5 investigations within 6 days. That's all.
Yeah, Starbucks, Red Bull, you name it, yeah. Last year we did – sure, go ahead.
I say, you've done towards the end of the investigations. Are you really feeling it? Do you feel yourself just – does it wear you out so much? You're like, oh, my God, I can't wait for this to be over.
Do we have a paranormal hangover at the end?
Yeah, or just gung-ho all the way through. You're like, let's do it,
yeah! Yeah, like last year we started – where are you guys located?
We're in Richmond, Virginia.
Okay, so last year we started at Waverly Hills. I'm sure you've heard of it. And the night before we stopped at Waverly Hills, we decided, hey, there's this theater that we've heard of in Columbus, Indiana. So we said, well, why don't we see if they're open? And they said, yeah, so they let us come in. So we started there, and it was about 110 degrees outside that day, and they didn't have any air. So, you know, you know how you get drained just from the humidity and stuff anyway. And so we started off with that night. Then we went to Waverly the next day. Then we were at Whisper Estates, which is back in Indiana. And then the fourth day, we ended up at Pollock Hospital, which is in Bartonsville, Illinois, which is part of the old Peoria State Hospital Asylum. And so we basically hit 2 tuberculosis sanatoriums and 1 former doctor's residence where he actually saw patients and a theater. And the funniest story I can tell you about the trip is we literally saw the movie The Conjuring the night before we left. So we thought it would be kind of fun to kick it off with that. And have you seen The Conjuring?
No. I don't. Well, believe it or not, with all the stuff I do with paranormal, I don't do scary movies. It's not my thing.
Well, typically, Ryan, I don't either. It's only because this was about a paranormal-related teen kind of thing is the only reason why, because it, you know, had Ed and Lorraine Warren in it. Well, part of the theme of that movie is that the kids are playing hide-and-go-seek, and what they do is clap, clap to give hints where they're hiding. Well, one of the things
that
happens... Okay, so in the previews, something paranormal sticks its hand out of a closet and does clap, clap. So I kid you not, we get there, and when you go in the basement of this theater, it looks a lot like the basement in the movie. So you're already got that creep vibe, right, which is why you and I don't like to watch horror movies, because... to me, people are way more scary than the paranormal, and so I don't really want to think about Michael Myers, you know, while I'm investigating. But so we're upstairs, and we use the obelisk during an investigation, but we don't call it evidence or even data unless we get, like, an EVP to go with it. But this incident was way too close to home that it was like, whoa. We actually had the obelisk say clap, and then a couple of seconds later, clap again. And here we had just seen The Conjuring the night before. So you kick off your whole paranormal thing with that creepy thing that happened. With, you know, and it's probably totally coincidence, but it kicked it off being funny. And then we end off with being at Pollock Hospital, which was a tuberculosis sanatorium. And so by the end, you are pretty drained because we drove a lot more time during this caravan than a typical one because we had to drive from Chicago to Louisville, and that itself is about 6 hours. And then we drove from there to the next site and then back. So we did a lot of driving on that trip, too. So by the end, yes, there were four of us that stuck it out the entire time. And I think by the Thursday, we were all like going, okay, enough's enough. And one of the things about coming back and doing this one, one of the locations is going to let us spend the night there so we don't have to worry about driving to a hotel and blah, blah, blah. We can just, like, you know, go to bed, get up, and then leave from that location on. And then the final night we end up – right, exactly. And then the final night we're back here in Chicago, so then we can actually sleep at home, go do the investigation, and come back and sleep at home. And so that kind of helped out, too, where – I think sleeping in hotels can also kind of wear you out because, you know, it's not your place and you just kind of...
Oh, yeah.
Also, you got to worry about checkouts a certain time, so you got to, you know, you just don't get a really good night's sleep. So we'll let you... You know, if I talk to you in late July, I'll let you know if this one kills us or not.
Oh, man, we have to have you back and just see how it went. I mean, I know sleeping in hotels can be rough, especially if they're data walls and there are active people beside you and you're up to, like, 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. Because either yelling at each other or doing other things, you know.
Well, we're pretty excited about this trip because we actually get to go back to McPike Mansion. And if you've ever checked out our website, one of the clearest EVPs we've ever been able to document happened at McPike Mansion. And I plan on playing it and see if we get any response this time, you know, based off of this EVP. And so I'm kind of excited because I haven't been there in 4 years, and it'll be a cool place to get to return to. I don't know if you've ever seen McPike Mansion. Ghost Lab, I think, did an episode there.
Really?
Yeah,
I've never heard of it, actually.
Did you watch Ghost Lab much?
I've watched a few episodes of it, but I didn't see that particular episode. And where is that?
It's in Alton, Illinois.
Uh-huh.
And it was one of their female investigators. They kind of sent her upstairs by herself, and she actually, I think, had some things happen. And it's a really cool place. The one problem is it's because it's so old and a lot of it has needs some work, it's limited of how much space you can actually investigate, so you're kind of limited to how many areas you can go into. So it's not huge like Waverly, you know, but it's kind of a cool place. And Sharon and her husband are trying so hard to restore this home. McPike was a wealthy family in Alton, so she's trying really hard to restore this place so it doesn't, you know, fall to the wayside. So anyway, I'm excited to get to go back.
Are they there, or are they just keeping it?
The family, when they all passed away, I think the city or the bank owned it for a while, and so then the roof kind of went and the windows have gone. And now they're just trying to, you know, keep it from having to be completely demolished, you know. So it actually is, they over time end up buying the house next door to it. So they live right next door to it, but they don't actually live in the building. But I actually saw some pictures this weekend where they might be doing some remodeling, so maybe they're trying to do some improvements to make it where it's a little more, a couple of the floors you can't go up on because they're just not safe enough. The city doesn't allow them to let people up there, but... it would be a gorgeous place to live if you ever could. You know, it would take some money to get it back livable, though.
So are they using the money from the paranormal investigation to go towards the restoration of the building?
Yes, they are. They have a lot of people, I think, that donate their time to, you know, like they had to do a lot of tuck pointing a couple years ago, and I think now they're starting to work on windows. And so a lot of what they do is put the money back into it as well as, you know, use people that are willing to donate their time to help them try to do the restorations.
Wow.
That's pretty cool.
It's pretty cool. It's good that we can give the people can give back while investigating at the same time. They can give back to the historical aspect of the town while also investigating, so it's like killing two birds with one stone, you know?
Right. Well, and Alton itself is a very historical town. It actually was the site of a Civil War prison, and when they tore it down, when they built the new prison in Joliet, Illinois, when they tore it down, a lot of that limestone, which you guys know what that word means, right? So a lot of the limestone from the building was actually used in foundations and walks and things for homes built, and a lot of those homes have reported activity. So there is a lot of folklore and a lot of heritage and historical things that happen in that town. And if you guys have ever watched the Ghost Hunters episode of Milton School, where they did an episode where a light bulb blew up over Grant's shoulder, that's in Alton. So it's a very historical little town here in southern Illinois.
I do have a quick question, and I really hate to backtrack, but I didn't want to interrupt you while you were talking. When you were doing the investigation, when on the ovulus you got the clap, and then afterwards you got the clap again, do you think that possibly could have been a spirit either channeling the energy of the fact that you guys watched The Conjuring before you came out, or do you think it could have been some of the energy that you guys were throwing off from the deja vu from the movie?
Well, and that is an excellent question, because we had actually had been joking since we got there about that movie. So if something was there and was following us, it definitely heard us talk about that. And that kind of became a joke we were doing amongst team members of, you know, clap, clap. So it definitely could have heard what we said, or, you know, some people wonder if spirits can read our minds. Could it have been picking up some of our thoughts of, wow, there's places that's kind of creepy in here, you know, kind of thing? But I think that's a good question. All I can tell you is we did get some EVPs there that seemed to answer questions, and we basically were in a room. I don't know if you know some of the older theaters, before they were movie theaters, back when you actually had plays and musicals done, and they would have like a room that was kind of a private room where people could sit, where they were kind of segregated from the rest of the public. We were actually in that area, and so it was very controlled sound-wise, because we could shut the door and we couldn't hear anything from outside or inside, and we actually did get a voice that commented on what we were doing. So is it possible that it overheard us talking and was giving that off? That's a good possibility.
Okay. Sorry, I didn't mean to make that track.
Not a problem at all. So if there's anything else you need to backtrack on, just let me know.
No, that was the main question sitting in my mind. But the thing was, you know, I'm sorry. My mind just kind of shut down on me.
See what that happens. Brain farts are no fun. Happens to me all the time.
Have you guys used an ovilus much in your investigations?
No, not really. No, we've used them on. Did you use one at Henricus, Kristen?
Was it Henricus or in Powhatan?
I think it was
Henricus. I wasn't with your group.
I think we used Rhonda's in Henricus.
Was that the first time or the second?
The paranormal gathering.
The first one or the second one? Because I didn't go to the second one.
The first time we went to Henricus, we used an ovulus. And I think they used colorful language on ours.
Oh, was that the one where Amber kept getting that the not so nice?
Yeah, and you know, their spirit called me a fucker, or fuck him. I think he said to me, "You know, you've made it in the paranormal world when a spirit says fuck
when they
you.
Curse at you."
No. Yes, I did it. Pop my paranormal cherry. Yeah, but yeah, we haven't. I mean, our team doesn't necessarily have one right now, but. We mostly use digital digis and spirit fox for the time being. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say you were going to ask me a question, I think, and then I asked you a question, so I didn't know if I got you sidetracked.
Oh, no, shouldn't take much to get me sidetracked. Trust me.
We're all big ADD kids, unless we're on an investigation.
Yeah.
And like we all hone in, like, hey.
I kind of zone out a little bit. Where was your last investigation?
We did an investigation on May 10th at a place called Midway Village. And Midway Village is actually a town that they've made from other historic buildings. So they actually moved these buildings from other places there. And
okay.
We worked with a place called Haunted Rockford, and it was us and two other paranormal teams there, and we investigated six buildings in the night, and people basically came along with us.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the last, that was a public event we did. So that was probably the last investigation that we actually conducted. Prior to that, we've been working on, so something that we did by ourselves without people with us,
mm-hmm.
that last investigation was actually in April. And we have a place that we've worked with another team that they call it their lab, and it's a place they can investigate all the time. And we'll take people out there occasionally for training. And we have some interesting things that happens there. And unfortunately, this past trip, we didn't get anything, but this was our third trip, and the first two times we went there, we did have things happen. So this one isn't open to the public. It's not places that you can go unless you know the team that's actually, you know, that actually runs the lab. But they ask us to come out there occasionally, and we use it to do experiments, train new members and things like that. So it's kind of someplace where we can do things in a safer environment where we kind of know the atmosphere and know what's going on. And then prior to that, probably something we've been working on for over a year is an old soda pot factory that we've investigated several times, and we investigated it. And it's the first time we've ever had this happen. It's probably one of the coolest experiences I've ever had that I don't know if we'll ever replicate, but it's a four-building location. And during the same rotation in all four buildings, we had activity happen at the same time. And we were, you know, using equipment where we could document it, but it was, we had REM pod going in two buildings, a geophone going in another building, and then EVP session happened in another one, and we all had activity happen in the same, like, 10-minute window. And so we've never really had that happen before. Yes, this was an old soda pop factory. And what it is this family built it, and as they got more money, they extended on. So what they did was one building became their home, one building became the factory, and then their daughter ends up marrying a guy and building a house next door to them, and then one was the carriage house where they would have kept this was back before cars, where they would have kept the carts and the horses and the wagons and things like that.
But,
and so we had activity.
Actual guests in the soda pop factory, or it's just the family that's dying while they're living there?
We don't know of any actual deaths documented in the buildings themselves, but because this is a historical society now, so now this old soda pop factory is a historical society, they definitely know the history of the family and know that there have been funerals there on site. I mean, the house has a former parlor. Like, you probably know that funeral parlors, that's where the term came from, as people would have the funeral in the parlor of their home. And so they know there's been funerals there. They know an old curator that used to help run the historical museum/society. He has since passed on. And so they know that there's people tied to the building that are definitely deceased, and funerals have happened there, but they don't know if anyone's actually died. But, you know, it's hard with records. They don't a lot of times document the physical address a lot of times of where people pass. So that part they're not exactly sure about.
Wow. Well, that's pretty cool. You got all the evidence at the same time.
Yeah, we actually just did our first public reveal with it about 2 weeks ago, and we've never done a public reveal before, but they had us bring all the things we've documented over the investigations. And one of the places where the REM pod was, which I'll be honest, we've had a REM pod for about 2 years, used it in every investigation, and never had it go off that wasn't walkie-talkie tied, you know, like if you see someone
mm-hmm.
using a walkie. And this place, it happened, we had gotten it's hard to explain, but we basically had some activity happen on a camera, so we put the REM pod there to see if we could get anything else happen, and we had a camera going on it, and it went off in that exact spot. So, again, I'm not exactly sure. I know there's things that can cause REM pods to have false positives, but we didn't have any walkie-talkie traffic happen at the time. We actually have a lot of our places like that shut their wireless routers and stuff down during the investigation, so we know it wasn't things like that. So we can't really explain it other than it did happen and we were able to document it when, and, you know, there was nothing we could find that actually caused it at the time.
Hmm. Well, when you, tell me about your public investigations. Do they come with you and are they allowed to ask questions on the investigations or is it more just, you know, watch and learn type of thing?
It's a little of both. It depends on the venue and what they want to do. So when we work with, this one group, or it's actually owned by a author, and it's called Haunted Rockford. And when we work with her, she actually does it more freestyle, where people can bring their equipment, but we have equipment set up, and then we basically explain. We do it in rotations where they stay with a different team in a different part of the location for a certain number of time, and then you get to rotate. We call them stations. We rotate through each station. Well, each station we typically feature different equipment, and what we do is explain what that equipment does, and then we see if we can get anything to happen that we can document on the equipment. So, like, we might have a spirit box at one station. We might have obelisks at another one. We might be using, you know, like geophones, or we have like reverse EVP technology. So we will just kind of, that way they can get exposed to a lot of different technology. We have some people that bring their own stuff and some people that want to use ours. And so we try to tell people what the equipment's for, and we try to help them understand what the technology's for as we're doing the investigations. So the one that I just talked about, the Midway Village, was that kind, where they rotated through the stations where we did showed them how to use these different tools and techniques. So we actually showed them, you know, how to do an EVP session and a spirit box session and things like that. The other flavor of the one, the types that we do, where they actually, it's more investigation stylish, where it's not, we basically have the investigators wearing equipment and then they kind of are just there with us as if they're part of the team. And so that is another way we've done them, as well as they're more of like an investigator on the thing versus someone being demonstrated equipment and that kind of thing.
Cool deal.
Have any of the groups ever brought like homemade equipment and stuff like that that, I don't know, they use in their own investigations that kind of helps, or?
You know, we have, and we actually have started having other teams now. If they don't have an investigation that weekend, they might sign up and go with us, you know. And so we've seen different people bring different things. It's given us ideas. We've actually demonstrated some equipment that we've built that other people have, like, oh, they've expressed interest and wanted to find out how to either make it or, you know, buy it themselves. I think one of the interesting ones I found was they're called Chaser Lights, and I believe that they started with, it's that group that did the Devil Box thing, the Devil's Box with the mirrors, and now it's escaping my mind, like Tennessee Wrath Chasers or something like that. And so there are these little boxes that have a light on them, and when they sense a temperature change, they actually light up. And so we actually saw someone using that piece of equipment during investigation, and then they also had thermal pads, where it's basically a pad that if the temperature changes on it based on body temperature, so we might put a trigger object on it. So those were a couple of things we saw people brought that we've bought since and have tried to use them, you know, ourselves to see if we could get any results.
Okay, that's cool.
That's awesome.
Go ahead, Ryan.
So who are some of your influences in the paranormal field? People you look up to, you know, to have got you, had influenced you to join this field. Anybody in particular?
Yeah, I mean, Yeah, I mean, there's not one in particular. I would say I have a lot of mentors. Some you may have heard of, some you may have not. Someone that I really, really enjoy reading their materials, and I've actually started implementing some of their recommendation, and that's David Roundtree. If you haven't read his book, it's a phenomenal book. We actually started doing the individual recorders on each investigator based on his recommendation of making sure each investigator has a control mic on them or they're mic'd up, and that helps us weed out our noises versus not, you know. I don't know if you know who Paula Westbrook is. Paula Westbrook used to run SPARS, but now it's called Delta Paranormal Project. I met her when I went to L.A. to film the My Ghost Story episode that I was on, and I was really impressed with her and her teammate, Cheryl, and I've formed a pretty strong relationship with them, and we're actually in the fall going to, me and the co-founder or co-owner of the group here, we're going to go down to Mississippi, and they're going to take us on some excursions down there in the New Orleans, Mississippi area, because that's where she's from, is Mississippi. Some other names you might see if you follow our Facebook group is Noah Lee, who runs Paranormal Investigators of Milwaukee. Him and Dale Kazmarek, I've met them on several occasions through local events here and, you know, talk to them about things occasionally, run photos past them when we get photos to review from people. And, you know, I mean, like, I watch all the shows, but not for the same reasons other people do. I watch it to see what we can learn to do or not to do. So there might be things they use that I'll be like, yeah, I never want to do that. So I would say in some ways I've taken things from all of the famous, you know, investigators you've seen of things I do or don't want to do with our investigations or with our clients or even how to handle certain situations. So those are some of the bigger ones, I would think.
So you watch the show as an investigator to see what they say, what you know, to learn from them. You don't watch it as entertainment. You learn it, you watch them as more like a classroom environment. I'm like, cool.
Yeah.
Maybe I can try this.
Right. Or what I don't want to try, like, we are anti-provoking in a negative way.
Yeah.
We will use trigger objects, take gifts along, things like that to see if we can get, but we don't do the provoking, like cursing and things like that. But I do kind of try to use it as more of an educational, but I also love the shows for the historical aspects. There are so many locations that they get to go to that you and I may never get to get into, you know, for one. I mean, come on, Ghost Adventures got to go to Dracula's Castle. I mean, how I'm never going to get that opportunity. So I love to go and see the historic parts.
For the historic or the walkthrough before the show actually, before the actual investigation starts up.
Well, and you just learn so much, and some of it may or may not be true, but I have found myself after watching a show, they might have said a term or set a piece of equipment on there that I'll look up and see, is that something that, you know, that I could learn from? Is it a technique I could start using or not using? And it just really depends. But I think there's positive in all of it, but I think there's negative in some of it too, because you end up with clients that think we're going to have the data returned around in 2 days and we're going to show up with camera crews. And we've had some of that too. We've had people thinking we were going to show up with a camera crew and we didn't. They pretty much just shut the door in our face. And here we had spent all this time up to this point trying to help them with things, you know. So I think there's been positive to the TV shows, but I think there's also been negative. So for me personally, I've used it more of a learning experience versus maybe some of the reasons why other people do. I'm sure there's a bunch of others that's not coming to my head right now, but I belong to tons of groups on Facebook, and I try to take away things I can from all of them, take away the positive things, you know, of how can I help my group. Even, and like you said, you've seen posts that I've taken that you've shared on, because I try to share information too. You see that probably almost every day I post, try to find something to put out there that might help others grow in the field as well.
It's definitely always a learning experience when you're in this field. You're always learning something new. Every day, new theories that people have and stuff. And, you know, I think definitely want to hear about your My Ghost Story deal that you went to LA.
Okay.
What's that about?
Well, being here in Chicago, you know, we have tons of places that, you know, are supposedly haunted. And this was actually a client case that we went on. And typically with clients, we don't talk about them unless we have permission to talk about them. Well, this was a business. So my ghost story contacted me. This was season two. So season two was just getting ready to start. And so this was back when it was still on the Biography Channel. We were not even allowed to have our team name anywhere on us because they didn't want to promote one team over another. It's changed a lot. Like, if you watch episodes now, they'll have team names on there. And we only were allowed two people, and now they'll have, like, five people from their team show up and things. So it's totally changed. The premise has changed. So anyway, they contacted me, and I contacted this client that we had some pretty – some visual data that we got. And I sent it to them and had her permission before I even sent it, and they liked it. So then we had to do a I don't really know if what they really call it, but basically we had to interview ourselves for a few minutes and send it in. They wanted to see how we would be on camera. And so then we filmed, you know, basically a little 1 or 2 minute, this is who I am kind of thing like that. And they liked it, and so they flew me and a client representative. So the client herself, she didn't want to go, but she sent her secretary because her secretary has had tons of experiences at this place. And what this place was is it used to be a house. It's an old Victorian. It's got the old widow's peak on top. I mean, it's a really cool place that's now been turned into a business where she runs a real estate office out of it, but there's, like, accountants in there, somebody that does nails. So that it's like each old bedroom and living room is now a different business. Mm-hmm. And so me and the client secretary went out there, and we filmed it, and we actually filmed on the set of where the movie Alcatraz was filmed. So, like, you actually saw they still had some of those sets there because they still use them for TV shows now if they need, like, jail cells and things like that. Uh-huh. And so, you know, they basically get you on camera. You're sitting in the dark with just, like, a spotlight on you, and there was about 3 cameras, I think, filming me at all times as they were asking questions. I didn't get as much airtime as the secretary because they wanted me to be scared, and I wouldn't. I can't. I wasn't scared. For me, it was an exciting opportunity. And so
you wanted you to be
cool.
scared, like,
I was
being interviewed. You wanted you to be scared.
Oh,
like,
yeah. Oh,
or,
yeah. They,
like,
they wanted the drama. It was all the drama. They wanted it to be very dramatic, and they wanted it to be like that I was scared during this activity and I was scared to be there. Oh. And that just wasn't the case. And we weren't allowed to say, I wasn't allowed to say my team at all. So I had to say, my friend and I were in this room and we saw this. You know what I mean? It's like they want
so that makes
to say
it sound like
way.
You're like non-professional. Like you just a bunch
right.
of kids, people just hanging out
right.
and all of a sudden this stuff started happening.
Right. We just happened to be at this place with a camera and this happened. So, but it was pretty clear.
Yeah.
When they came back and actually did, so then you interviewed, you do that in L.A., and then they actually mm-hmm. send a camera guy, and it literally was just a single camera guy. He met us at the location and then talked to her and I again at the location and actually filmed hot spots. So, like, where she had activity happen, he would film those things, and that's where they put the moving camera shots that you see in the shows and things like that. And so so it was kind of interesting from that perspective. From that, I learned a lot about paranormal television for the fact that I know Ghost Hunters gets a lot of crap because I'm sure they think stuff is staged and stuff is fake. But I can also tell you they don't get a lot of say-so in what actually ends up on the air. They can recommend, but it still boils down to there's a production company and Sci-Fi makes some decisions. Well, the Biography Channel decided. I mean, there was actually a whole other group. I can tell you there was 4 groups filming the day I filmed. And one group had a psychic and another person, and they never even aired their episode. So that one just got scrapped altogether. Even after all the filming, they just decided not to move forward with it. So it just really depends if they feel like you're going to be good on television, too. You know what I mean? So I must have said the same interview 10 times because they wanted to make sure they had, like, the same cuts, the same things. And so it definitely opened my eyes up to the television stuff, that a lot of it is scripted from the perspective of something might happen, but then they go back and have certain things get reenacted so that they can get the right camera shots, so they can get the right camera angles, so they can get the right things for television, if you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah, I understand.
I wouldn't say a lot of the things they wanted me to say, like they kept trying to get us to say, like, say ghost a lot, where a lot of us use the word entity or, you know, things like that. So there was some of that stuff that, but it was a good experience from other perspectives. I've met people now that I will probably always have long-term relationships with that I never would have had a chance to meet them otherwise. And so I think
they're normal, people bringing us together, bringing people together like that.
Right. Because now with Noah and Paula, I know that she has a conference they do every October, and so one of these days I would love to be able to get down there and actually go to their conference and, you know, meet other professionals and things like that. And so there was a lot of positive. I don't want it to sound like it was a completely negative experience, but it just did open my eyes to it. And you can actually find the episode. It's every time a different site puts it up, they take it down. It used to be on YouTube, and then, you know, YouTube kind of got swatted for having some TV shows up on their site. But anyway, it was some cool footage. You can actually see the footage on our website where it was something that we can't explain. And we've investigated there a couple of times, and every time had, you know, things happen that were like, you know, EVPs or visual things that we've been able to document.
Wow. That's cool. And it was an old Victorian building. Now it's a real estate office?
Yeah, the real estate office functions on the first floor, and then there's a couple other businesses that run in there as well. So now it's kind of, if you think of it like a strip mall that's now in a house, that's kind of what she's done with it. She basically took this old home and turned it into places where smaller businesses could rent out a room to run their business out of.
Okay. That's cool. Yeah, I've been.
Sorry.
No, go ahead. Yeah, please.
I was gonna say, was it only that one business that had the paranormal activity going on, or anything supernatural, or was it a handful of them?
We actually had them talk to some of the other tenants, and one of the upstairs things that she rented, a guy actually lived in it, so they kind of turned it into like a mini apartment, and he had stuff happen. And so other people had experiences there, but a lot of them don't like to talk about it. I mean, as you guys know, when you come across this stuff, some people are very willing to share their stories, and some are like, they're total skeptics, so they don't want to believe it. But the secretary that works there a lot, she has experiences all the time, even still to this day. And, I mean, like, to the point where she one day was the only person there, and she thought she heard walking around, doors opening and closing, and she decided to lock up the building and leave for the day because it was getting to be too much. She was just too scared to be there by herself.
So what kind of activity do you think it was? Was it, like, male, female?
You know, a lot of the visual stuff we have, where I'm not sure. We actually have, it's hard to explain, but it kind of starts out like a smaller type of light anomaly, and then it grows bigger as it disappears into the floor right in front of the camera. And a lot of the EVPs probably were more male. We were able to do a lot of research on the family that had lived there and found out more about they had like a child born with some special needs. And, you know, back in that time, a lot of times those children weren't treated as well as, you know, the kids that didn't have special needs. And so we know that there was a child that had lived there his entire life and passed away there that not sure exactly what was wrong with him, but there was definitely something wrong with him. We found out that there might have been some underground tunnels that came from the house where people suspected it might have been on the Underground Railroad, but we weren't able to prove that it was. So it could have just been someone had built a cellar and it looked like a tunnel, you know. So it was kind of hard to for some of the claims for us to be able to back up some of the stuff that we found. But we actually worked with the Historic Society in that town for quite a while to find out as much as we could about that location to actually get as much information as we could research-wise. But we were able to definitely find even, luckily, a grandchild of the original owners had contacted the real estate lady and sent her letters and stuff from the original owners that had were like, you know, information about the family that had lived there. So that was kind of cool too, having some actual historic information from the family that had owned the house at one point in time.
Yeah, that's cool. That way you have names you can actually call out.
Right.
To elicit a response.
Right.
That's always
exactly.
Good to have. Wow. So was that near where you live, that location?
Yeah, I'm in a suburb north of there, and so that's one of the we kind of service DuPage and Will County here in the Chicago area, so that one's actually in Will County in a town called New Lenox. And New Lenox has a lot of activity. There's several golf courses they believe are on Indian burial grounds. There's a lot of water that are near these golf courses, so there's been a lot of activity reported. We've had a few different investigations in that area with clients.
That's cool.
Were they like personal residents or that were around the golf courses or?
Yeah, they all, other than this one that's now a business, all the others were residents and they were all within like a mile or two of one of these golf courses that have been known to be tied to the burial grounds and the different water ways that are through that area.
Oh, wow.
So there's Indian burial grounds?
Yeah, like Native American, yeah.
Wow.
There's a lot of, like, Black Hawk, Fox, Sauk Indian tribes that were up in this area, and several of our current highways had once been a trail. And so New Lenox is a southern suburb where there's been a lot of activity. You might have heard of Joliet, where there's a lot of activity in Joliet. Well, Joliet and New Lenox right next door to each other. They're bordering towns. And so a lot of that activity that it kind of borders around that area is a lot of people believe is tied to stuff like the Native American burial grounds, the waterways, a lot of limestone in that area.
Yeah, I've definitely heard of Native American burial grounds being linked to hauntings and add the water and the limestone. Seems like a seems like a perfect storm to me.
Right.
You know?
Well, and you know, another thing that we do a lot, and you probably see them if like I said, if you've been on our Facebook group, is we do a lot of public education. And so we do a lot of presentations at libraries and park districts to kind of educate the public on what is paranormal, what's not paranormal, some of the facts, misnomers. And we always get asked about certain areas, you know, of things that have happened, Joliet being one of them, because there's a lot of things that's happened in that area. And this year we're actually offering one that's called Legend Tripping across Illinois. And so it's basically places that we've been in Illinois that kind of, like, we show some of the data we've collected at those places to kind of give people a feel for this area, some of the activity that we've been able to document.
It's always good to it's always good to educate the public when it comes to the paranormal. That's for sure.
Yeah.
What's your best piece of evidence do you think you've gotten?
The one at McPike is pretty good. We've got a pretty good one from Waverly, too. If you know much about Waverly, it is a former tuberculosis sanatorium. And we actually have two coughs that happen about 20 seconds apart on the audio. And we've been able to, you know, debunk that it wasn't us. And when you have tuberculosis, what is one of the things you do? You cough. Uh-huh. Then the thing at McPike that was interesting, and both of these clips can be found on our website, but the thing about McPike that I really liked is Sharon was running late to meet us for the investigation we were going to do there. And she was explaining to us why, and her cat had been sick and she was talking about going to the vet and having an x-ray done, and as she pauses to take a breath, it sounds like something else that wasn't one of us says, take the x-ray, and it's crystal clear. And I recently... This is at McPike, yeah. So I recently sent it to her as a reminder, because we had been there before, and I didn't tell her. I'm real big on trying to let people listen, and then I let them tell me what they think it is. And so I didn't tell her what it said. I sent it to her. I set the stage of what she was talking to us about. And she called me. I mean, she didn't even email back. She called me, and it was like 10 o'clock at night, and said, okay, I hear take the x-ray. And I said, yep, that's what we hear as well. And she's like, oh, my God. So that was probably one of the clearest EVPs I've ever had that I, you know, and I'm sure skeptics are going to say we picked up a stray radio signal from somewhere or it was some other sound, but it just sounds too much like a voice. And what are the likelihood that we would have gotten those words right after she just said x-ray? So I have a hard time believing that it wasn't something part of the, you know, part of that house trying to get her attention or trying to interact with her. I have since
Didn't
found out.
Didn't you say earlier that McPike was a theater?
That was the Crump. McPike actually was a home. McPike was a family in Alton that he had a lot of money.
That's right.
And he
that's
built
right.
this.
One that's, okay.
Yep.
All right.
And so I found out recently that cat that she was talking about in that clip, he used to get out a lot of her house, and that's where they'd find him. They'd find him in the mansion. And I guess he passed away about 6 months after we were able to document that from whatever it was that had made him sick. And so now it makes you wonder, was the spirit trying to tell her, yes, he needs an x-ray, you know, he is sick, you know, try to help this cat.
Was the guy a doctor?
But I don't know. No, you know, I don't know that he was, but he did have a lot of money. So they would have probably had more exposure to medicine than the layman would have. But I could find out for you if you wanted to know. I could get a hold of Sharon and find out.
Maybe caught a residual at back like the same time, and maybe it was residual of a doctor saying get the X-ray. It just happened to catch it at that same time.
Right. Yeah, I mean, if we had that at Waverly, I would have gone that route, you know, that it was something residual because they would have had that equipment. We also looked, though, when were x-rays invented versus when that house was built and when they lived there, and the time was a couple decades off. So, you know what I mean? Like, so it wasn't that common of a term back in the time when the main family lived there. So it wouldn't have been something that they might have talked about just readily, like as opposed to saying, like, my name is Tommy or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
But, no, that's definitely a good thought, and I could definitely ask her because I know she knows the history of the – when we go back in July, I could definitely ask her and see if there might be some tie that way.
Well, just something curious, you know.
Yeah. No, I think it's a great idea.
Oh, yeah, we've got some pretty good stuff here. We've got some pretty good experiences. What's if you had like a dream location, a bunch of places you'd want to go, that get you any money, and take anybody with you, where would you want to go?
Well, I definitely would like to go check out Alcatraz at some point. But the island in Italy, is it Pavilia? I would love to go there. And it recently sold, and I was like, I wish I was wealthy because that would have been cool to own it. But I think there's so many places. I mean, you know, it's like I would have, like, my bucket list if money wasn't an object. But I also think any castle in Ireland or England or anywhere in Europe would be a really cool place to just visit, even if you didn't think it was haunted. I just think there would be so much cool things, you know, to see and experience.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I definitely like to check out the castles in Ireland and England, and even if I don't get any kind of paranormal experience, it would be cool to go check out. Sure.
Right.
I'd actually like to go check out the Ham House in England. The one with Lady Lauderdale and her dog.
I think that
would be pretty cool.
You see if you can see her walking her dog?
Yeah, since allegedly there's apparently no dogs allowed on the property, but people still say that they hear her dog barking down the hallways or they see her walking her dog.
Yeah, see, that would be pretty cool.
Shoot, man, that'd be awesome. I like to go to Gettysburg, you know.
Gettysburg.
That
would
definitely be a very cool
right
place.
Do you ever make it to the East Coast to do any investigating over here?
I think the furthest east we've made it was so far has been Waverly. I would love to get to go to Eastern State Penn.
That's a good one. Road trip.
Yes, road trip, definitely, maybe 2015.
Oh.
Where in Virginia do you guys recommend if we ever make it out that way?
Oh, well, there's... What do you think, Kristen?
I don't know. I've recently become obsessed with Henricus. I really want to go back. I was so upset I couldn't go the second time.
We should probably tell her what Henricus is. Go ahead. Tell
me
what it is.
I'm sorry. it's the second settlement aside from Jamestown. It still resides on the James River, I believe. And
yes.
Okay, awesome. And it's a pretty extensive history there. Even
Pocahontas
one of the books I was reading. Yeah, there's Pocahontas. There was the Indian raid. On the massacre, the priest, was he a priest?
It was a Reverend Whitaker.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely a lot of activity and definitely a lot of energy that you can feel. It's a beautiful, beautiful place.
Yeah, it is. There's
lots of
history in that place for sure.
Do you guys know where
St. Albans? That's a good one too.
Oh,
that's
and
a sanatorium
I
in Radford, Virginia. Yeah, that's a good one.
Have you guys heard of Hebron, Virginia? Germana Colony area. Well, that's where
my
ancestors settled.
Heard of that I live in Virginia, but no, I haven't heard of that. Before.
Well, if I ever make it out there, that's where my ancestors landed when they came over here from Germany, and so I would love to get there and see what history tie, and being a descendant of that area, I always wondered if that would spark any activity in that area.
So that must be on the coast of Virginia.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
I was saying there are lots of cool places on the coast of Virginia to investigate. Like berry plantation places like that.
Oh, there's also the exchange. And then
there we go.
There's a
I know I was forgetting one.
But we do have a question in a chat. They're asking, how do you feel about spirits who mimic, and why do you not call spirits ghosts?
Well, I call them entities versus ghosts or spirits just because that can be a more all-encompassing terminology. And I've had people challenge me what ghost means versus what spirits mean. So entity just kind of is more all-encompassing depending on what we would come across. As far as mimicking doppelgangers, we've actually came across a situation where we've had two doppelganger situations. One was we were doing an EVP session inside of the location, and a team member that was outside far enough away, and we had been able to check the recorder and know it wasn't her. We heard inside voices that sounded like hers, and it was whispered in the ear, and we actually got it on the recorder. So whatever was in there was mimicking the voice of this investigator it was not her speaking. The other situation I've had with a doppelganger was I was at Waverly Hills Sanatorium, And we had one, the guard, they leave a guard there with you all night, and the guard had come up to us. But he had stayed in the shadows where I couldn't see his features, but I could tell from the outline it was him. And he just made a comment about, well, we've had activity in this area, and that's all he really said, and he kind of left. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, that was interesting. He just stayed for like 30 seconds or less. Well, not even 5 minutes later, he comes back again, but this time he actually came up to us where I could see his face, and I could, you know, definitely tell it was a human. And I said, oh, you're back already? And he's like, what do you mean? I haven't been on this floor for about an hour. And I'm like, no, you were just here. And he's like, no, I wasn't. And so we told him what happened. He's like, I have that all the time. He said people report it. So I'm a skeptic. And so I'm like, okay, he's playing a prank on us. So I called all my other team members on the walkie and said, okay, was this guy, you know, have you seen him? And they're like, oh, yeah, one of my teams on the floor right below us said, yeah, he had been here with us for like the last 30 minutes. He had just left us and came to you guys. And I'm like, okay, so it wasn't him. So we actually believe we saw something that was mimicking him because the voice sounded similar. And it, like I said, I couldn't see the face, but the outline looked like his shape because he wore a hat even. So it even had a hat on like what he had. And so I'm like, did I just have a doppelganger experience or what? So do I believe it's possible? Yes, we've had clients that have had reports of hearing voices of loved ones when the loved one is asleep or not even there. And so I believe there is a possibility. Now, I don't know that I believe the second part of that, which is if you see your own doppelganger, it means that your death is pending. As far as I know, there haven't been any documented cases that that is the case. But do I believe there can be ghosts or spirits that mimic us? Definitely.
Think it's possible that the security guard could have been projecting himself, astrally protecting himself without realizing it?
Anything is possible. I mean, he definitely has been doing this for a long time. I mean, he's been in this field for about 38 years, he told us. And so, you know, I think the longer you're in the field, the more you become sensitive to things and open to things. And
uh-huh.
So it could be possible. And it could just be that something there really likes him, and so it's always mimicking him. But, yeah, that's a good question.
I've heard of, like, I guess spirits mimicking a voice, like on a recorder or like a spirit box.
Uh-huh.
You know? You hear your friend's voice coming through, but your friend's standing right there.
Right,
you know, that,
right.
But a full body, mimic, that's gotta be rare.
Well, and that's why my instant thought was he's playing, pulling our leg, right? It was really him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it was, if my team hadn't said, no, he was just with us, I wouldn't have believed it. I would have been like, yeah, no, it was him, and he just wants us to think it was something else, you know?
Wow. That was at Waverly, where was that taken again?
It was at Waverly Hills.
Okay. Yeah, I do remember them talking about that on Ghost Adventures, about there being doppelganger activity at Waverly Hills.
Yeah, we were actually at that time that happened was 2 weeks after the Ghost Adventures episode had been filmed, and we didn't even know until we got there that Ghost Adventures had been there. And so he basically was the guy you see being interviewed. He had like on a leather vest and a hat. That's the guy that we actually saw the doppelganger of.
Oh, wow. This
yeah.
guy you said there's definitely doppelganger activity. Huh. What is your favorite piece of equipment to use when you go on an investigation?
Well, for me, there's two things I always, besides my flashlight, I'm a big believer on flashlights, but I always have a millimeter on me just so that if we do get something, I can check for EMFs right then. I know it's a single axis, but at least it's better than nothing, and they are backlit, so you can see them in the dark more so than a tri-field. And then you also have temperature on it. I've also been carrying something called an inductive amplifier. And an inductive amplifier is, if no one's familiar with it, I can explain it, but it's basically a piece of equipment that is used to, like, tone out phone lines. and they're modified slightly. And what it basically does is it's sensitive to man-made EMFs. And so basically if we get an EMF spike, I turn it on to see if I can find a man-made source for it. So if it's not buzzing and we had an EMF spike, well, then it wouldn't have come from a man-made source. And so those are the two things I typically always carry on me besides a flashlight.
Okay, cool.
I've only used a flashlight maybe once or twice. Got some pretty decent responses at Henricus. But how accurate can that really be when trying to go for responses?
Well, let me clarify. The flashlight is so I can see. It's not for me to try to have the spirits manipulate it. We do not use the mag lights to try to get spirits to talk to us. There is a whole video thing, and Ryan might have seen it, where a guy has done like a whole 20-minute video on all the different things that can cause those flashlights to do what they do. But what we do have is a contact flashlight, and it's a flashlight where you actually have to break the contact with a physical touch, and we will try to use it. And to date, we have not had any success with it. I believe, going back to your question, there's a lot of things that happen within the technology of the flashlight itself that can cause it to get a spark to cause the light to go off and on. So I don't know how accurate I believe that it could actually be to be an indicator. Just like with a K2, there's so many false positives. I would never use something from a K2 to be something as paranormal. We use it more to debunk like EMF fields and things like that.
Okay.
I don't know if you've seen that, Kristen. It's a really good video. You could probably do a quick search on it and do like the flashlight test. It's on YouTube, and it's a really good video that he breaks down the flashlight in detail of why it can happen based on arcing of the electricity from the battery kind of stuff. He goes into all those techie things that a lot of it's way over my head, but at least it makes sense of why it might happen.
Okay.
Definitely, that's for sure. Wow, he's had some pretty cool experiences.
Yeah, I mean, I have never. There's still more experiences I'd like to have. Like, I've had team members have, see, like, a full-body apparition in front of them where we've actually had the footstep audio to back up what they saw. So other than the doppelganger thing, like, I haven't really, like, seen, like, something that I can, like, say, yeah, I've seen, like, an apparition with my own eyes, if you will. But I'm also so – I call myself a skeptical believer. So I believe there's the possibility that paranormal can happen, but I second-guess everything. And so, like, I have a video that happened at Waverly that I go back and forth all the time and trying to figure out, is there a rational reason why that could have happened? And I keep trying to, I try to analyze things. And if we're ever able to debunk something, I try to see, does that relate to anything else we've ever captured that might, throw those things out as well? So I still keep a good, healthy relationship with the skeptic in me, if that makes sense.
Well, that's a good attitude to have. That way you're not automatically jumping to the conclusion that what's got to be paranormal. It's good to have look at evidence through a skeptical eye. That way when present the evidence to the public, this is what we found, that you went through it with a fine-tooth comb, and if they don't believe it, then, well, that's their own problem. What you did to go through the evidence, all the painstaking steps you made to go through it, and to make it out to the public, that we had to do to make sure that it was unexplainable. I mean, it might not be paranormal, you don't know for sure, but at least you can't explain it.
Right.
Sorry. It's kind of on the subject of, like, using your skepticism and everything, either from personal experience or from what you've seen in other groups, what do you think is the best way to go and enter an investigation when you're going to a place?
Well, the first thing is having permission to be there. I'm sure you've seen the recent one where there was three guys that got arrested recently for trespassing. I'm a big, big believer on, you know, getting permission in writing for places before you go. But as far as equipment goes, I see people go out and blow so much money on all this equipment. And honestly, a good recorder is where I would start, a good EMF detector. And if you have a good recorder and a good EMF detector, that's going to get you a long ways. Because there's a lot of tools out there that we've never even had activity happen on them at all. And we use the Zoom brand, but Tascam is another good brand because the microphones in them are such a high quality. It can help you, you know, make sure that your stomach isn't growling. Believe it or not, your body makes noises you forget, and you won't remember when you review the data 2 weeks from the day you investigated. Keeping logs is another big thing, you know, writing things down as soon as they happen in as much detail as possible. Trying also not to talk to each other. If two people have the experience, if it's possible, both of you write your experiences down and then compare notes because you can influence each other. Because I think the more documentation you have, the more real it's going to be because it's not just going to be my word versus your word. We both had two experiences. And so we keep a log file in our command center at all times. I have my team, they carry a notebook on them at all times so they can make notes right when it happens. So I don't know, does that kind of answer your question?
I was aiming more for, like, mentality.
That okay,
also
mentality.
Went along with it. That was cool.
Okay. Well, and as far as mentality goes, I'm going to say don't lose that skeptic. I mean, in all honesty, if every single thing that happens is paranormal, more people would be able to document and prove that, you know, entities exist. It wouldn't just be the occasional thing. And so we all see tons of orb pictures. Try to analyze it. I mean, think of other things that can cause them. Is it lens flare? You know, try to do your own research, too. Know your equipment. And so that's kind of the mentality I tell my team. My team members go through a lot of training before they go out in the field. I'm real big on sharing data with them, kind of like what Ryan was talking about earlier. He sees my posts. My team gets the same thing. I mean, I send them articles and, you know, ask them to read it. Every team meeting we do training. And so I think a lot of it is educating yourself. And so going into it with that mentality that, yeah, paranormal is possible, but there's these other things that can be. I mean, I know people that are self-proclaimed psychics that still have a skeptical mind, and they still try to debunk things, and they still try to, you know, come up with rational reasons because not everything that happens may be tied to the spiritual world. There are things that go on that we don't even realize. How many people have actually sat in their own homes without anything on in the dark and listened to what their own house sounds like? And there are so many noises that happen that are not necessarily paranormal. And well, and that's part of what we teach our team. I mean, one of the things we do is once a year, any new equipment, we do tests on it and see what happens. So, like, if we get a new digital recorder, we try to record different sounds on it so that new team members can listen to it and so they know what a stomach growl will sound like on a recorder. They know what dust looks like on a camera. And then that way they start with a basic knowledge so that they can try to help. So is that more of the mentality you're looking for?
So basically chalked up with, like, go in with no expectations, but if you find something, you go through every single possibility, and if none of those possibilities fit, then it's possibly a supernatural / paranormal type deal.
Yeah, and you actually just brought up something that's a very good point. I know on TV, you know, people see, like, all the exciting parts. They take how many ever hours they investigate it and put it in 40 minutes. You know you've investigated. You'll go hours and nothing will happen. Or you'll go hours and think nothing happened, and you go back and listen to your audio, and actually something was there.
That happens a lot of us, you know, putting hours and hours at a location. Like, oh, we didn't get anything. Come back and listen to our digital recording
right.
A few days later, and the people are like talking up a storm. You know, you don't realize it.
The only thing I have to say to that Ryan is pocket digi.
That was fun.
Yeah.
Do you? I met a lot of people. If they think place is haunted, they go into a location with a different mindset than if it's just a regular house. You know, you gotta put that out of your head. You're like,
because I also you see, here's something like, what was that? But if you think it's a regular house, you'd be more skeptical, like, oh, it's just the house setting or whatever. But if you think a house is haunted, you hear a creak. Oh my God, I hear footsteps.
Right. Yeah, I think it has to be a fine balance, right? You can't be so overly skeptical you actually throw out legitimate things, but at
sure.
the same time, know that every house settles, every building has creaking sounds, and making sure that you're, you know, giving those things their props as well. It's not just
mm-hmm.
every single sound is, and that's where I think education comes in. And you know, I see a lot of people that get upset when they put pictures out there, and then people get mad at them because they'll go, oh, it's pareidolia, or no, it's just dust. And the thing is, a lot of, have you done your own research? Do you know your own equipment to be able to rule that out? And that's what I try to do, is I try to learn as much, and every day to me is a learning experience. I think, Ryan, you said that earlier, there's so much in this field to learn. I know I don't know it all, and I know that
yeah.
tomorrow I might learn something different. And I, that's what I tell my new team members, kind of going back to Kristen about the mentality. I tell them flat out, what you know today, so their first day on the team, what you know today, a year from now, you're not going to believe the same thing. Because I believe over time, things your opinions do change. You learn more about certain things, and you kind of, your opinion changes about what could be possible, what's not possible, or even like things that you thought could be paranormal, and they're really not. It's just, you know, normal house sounds or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. It's easier to let your mind wander, get yourself riled up if you don't keep yourself in check. But when you go on the investigation, before you go in, do you take any protection with you, or do you like say a prayer, or what? How do you feel about that?
So me personally, or how does the team do it?
No, your group.
Or both.
When your group goes in on
both.
Yeah, both.
Me personally, I do take protection, and we basically leave it up to each individual team member if they want to do protection or not. We have different religious beliefs on the team, so each person kind of has their own thing they bring to it, but we do something before we go in, and before we leave, the last thing we say is do not follow me home. We, you know, tell them that this is where they need to stay, and so that we don't have trespassers, you know, heading or coming back with us, or hitchhikers, depending on how you want to word it. But one of the things I have found by talking to people that have done this many more years than me, a lot of people don't believe you need to do protection because the spirits know your intent when you come in. They know your intent of and your religious beliefs, like your religious belief. So I think for each person it's different. It's personal. It's what makes you feel comfortable. And so if it makes you feel comfortable to do protection, then I totally recommend it. Because if you go in with your, how I tell my new team members, and this is honestly how I look at it, when police officers and firemen get ready for work, they put their uniform on. And that part of that uniform is their mindset, their mentality.
Uh-huh.
And I believe for this field, a lot of it's the same way, because you don't know if you're going into something that's negative, and you got to be prepared for that. So mentally
yeah.
prepare yourself for these investigations.
Yeah. Well,
and so I think, to me, that's part
fine.
Of that protection. Right.
Yeah.
Well, and for me, it's part of that protection, right? You're protecting you're getting your mentality ready for whatever you could possibly be coming
yeah.
across.
Now, You brought up a religious factor. Do you think the different religious beliefs affect the way an investigation can go?
You know, we in our experience, I haven't necessarily saw that. The only thing I have seen that I can tell you might have been a factor in some activity, and we pointed it out to the person, and since then they say activity has gone down. They didn't have one strong faith system, and what I mean by that is they were really embracing of everything, which I think is cool, but they would have, like, a cross, and right next to it they might have the Star of David, and then right next to it they might have something from the Muslim faith. And so then it kind of seemed like that their faith system was confused, if that makes sense. And so I had actually consulted with somebody with training in theology, and they recommended that this person might want to think about weaning some of that out because it might cause some confusion in the spirit world that might be causing some of the activity to happen. And so, you know, I can't prove or disprove that. That was just advice that we got to, and we gave to the client, and she actually did take some of that advice, and that actually caused some of the activity to go down. So I think a lot of it is whatever your faith is, stick to it. But I can tell you, if we're dealing with someone that's Muslim, I'm not going to bring a Catholic priest in, you know, to help them. I'm going to try to find someone that has their faith system, because I think you would be doing a disservice to them if you were trying to force a different religious belief, you know, into the situation. So that I try to tailor it that way, is learning more about the religion of the client to see if that does or doesn't help with how they may or may not deal with things after the fact.
Okay.
You know, I think it's like everything. It's all about intent. If you take any object, if you give it enough belief, I think things can happen. It's all about your intent. And so, you know, some people say it's just a game, you can buy it over the shelf. And that might be the case, but people are actually using it, though, for other reasons. They're actually using it to try to get activity to happen. And so, you know, be careful what you wish for. And so, are the boards themselves necessarily evil? I can't say for sure, but I think it's the intent of the people using them that can cause the things to happen.
Okay.
Was Kristen going to ask me a question, or?
I thought she was.
Yeah. Yeah, they definitely answered it. and definitely, if your client is of a different religion of what you practice, you don't. Yeah. Take the sigils of your said religion in with you, because who knows what could happen. Yeah.
Well, and they believe different things, right? I mean, the terminology is not even going to be the same for them necessarily. And, you know, a lot of people will say, well, I know people who are atheists. Well, how can they believe in ghosts and spirits, entities? And I'm like, well, I don't know that one has to do with the other. I don't know that you have to have a necessarily belief in God to believe that energy can still stay here. And so I think each person is a little bit different, and trying to approach it from their mindset, I think, is going to help them learn, you know, from the experience and know what, so we can relate to each other, if that makes more sense. And I believe it or not, I literally one day was at the doctor, and he saw a book I was reading, and it was a ghost-related book. And he starts talking to me, and he's Muslim, and he starts talking to me about jinn and everything. And I learned a ton from him just that day, just talking to him about their religious beliefs of how entities are and how it impacts things. And it was a very fascinating conversation for me, and very eye-opening of the Christian faith, which is what I was raised, there's more things out there and other belief systems, and making sure I encompass those things because I'm dealing with clients from all different walks of life.
Well, I think it's like, you know, spirits exist whether you're religious or not. If they're there, they're there. No matter if
right.
you're Christian, Jewish, Indian, Hindu, or Muslim, if they're in your house, they're in your house. So,
right. I mean. Well, and I think going to what Kristen's saying, there's another part of that belief system. But what if the spirit itself was of a Catholic faith when they were alive? Well, then, yeah, I mean, that might get a little bit sticky of how you would deal with that, and that's where I would rely on clergy of some sort to help guide me through those, how I would deal with that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, going back to the protection thing we were talking about earlier, I think it's good to have that peace of mind. Because even if you don't believe it, but it's, you know, it still helps to like think.
It helps to think that you're protected.
That way, you're not all paranoid the whole time you're in the
right.
investigation. So, got some pretty good EVPs. Do you have any? You have any good video evidence?
Yeah, We've got a couple of things that we haven't been able to explain away yet. One of which was at Waverly, where we actually got, I don't like the word orb, I use light anomaly, but we actually have a light anomaly UC form in front of the camera, and it takes about 20 seconds for it to move across the room. Another one we had, though, was at Ohio State Reformatory. So if you're familiar with that location, it's where Shawshank Redemption was filmed. And
But I do believe we have a – I said I really hate to interrupt a bit, but I think we have a caller in queue.
Oh, we do? All right, hang on.
All right.
I had to run to my caller real quick to get them.
You can continue. I didn't really mean to interrupt you. It's just
– No, it's okay. Do you want me to continue, or you want to talk to the caller, or –
Oh, no, you can continue. I don't know if he has questions.
Okay. So basically, I'll try to make a long story short. We were in the room above the chapel, and we just were feeling like just whatever there just didn't feel very nice. I'm not saying demonic. I'm just saying it was kind of like a nasty kind of feeling. And as we were leaving, we go down the stairs. We actually captured a black mass type shape fly over one of the investigators' head, and I caught it on camcorder as we were heading down the stairs. And that investigation took me a little bit of time to shake that feeling. I actually had to go outside and kind of shake that off because the feelings I was getting from whatever was there was not good. That was my most negative experience I've ever had.
We have a caller online.
Hello.
Good evening. How are y'all tonight?
Pretty good. How are you?
Doing good. Thank you. Yeah, I have a question. Actually, I got a couple. This is what I want to ask. The first one is how do you feel about the personal energy affecting the spirit box or the Nautilus? And two, how do you feel about the spirit energy of one person actually being in that structure? How do they affect that, and how does that affect your investigation?
You want me to take the question, guys?
Sure. Let me repeat that real quick. Question is, how do you feel one person's physical or rather mental energy affects the spirit box or the Nautilus? And two, how do you feel that the personal energy of one's investigation tour affects the investigation itself by the spirit entity?
So I assume you mean the investigator, the energy the investigator's giving off, and if that's the case. As far as how it affects the spirit box and obelisk, honestly, I haven't given much thought to that, so that's going to be something I'm going to ponder now. As far as them giving off energy, causing things around them to be attracted and or happen, I definitely think that could be a possibility. One of the things I tell my investigators is, I don't know what your day's been like, but you need to clear your mind before you go into a place, because my thought is if you're projecting negative energy, say you've had a fight with someone, if you go into a place, you could attract negative things. So I try to get people to go in with like an open slate, if you will, so they don't necessarily cause things to happen from a different perspective. And what I mean by that is things to affect them personally. And I'm not talking about they cause the EVP to happen, but they could cause the spirit to interact in a negative way towards them. So I definitely think the person, the investigator themselves, whatever energy they give off can affect things. And so it's important to go in with a clear mind and a good intent.
Right. Well, how about that? How about the entity or spirit actually affecting the investigator themselves?
I've seen that happen. I've seen people all of a sudden get in a bad mood or start acting stranger than I know from the person that I know, and I, you know, usually make them go outside and clear their mind. So I definitely believe that people can have empathic type of abilities where they pick up energy from the spirits.
Very good. All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate y'all
taking my call now. Well, thank you very much for calling, and we appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. Y'all have a blessed night now.
Well, that was fun.
Mm-hmm.
For,
Oh, I don't think it's the first time I actually had someone call in.
We made it. Yes, we have a caller. Yes.
Oh, well, this was.
You know you made it when, right?
Exactly. Exactly. You know you're paranormal investigator when they call you fucker, and you know you're the radio host when you actually have someone call in. Well, this has been a fun interview.
Well, thanks. I've totally enjoyed it.
Thank you so much for taking time to join us and, you know, telling us about your group and, you know, letting us pick your brain a little bit tonight.
No problem. It's been a pleasure.
And hopefully maybe we can get you back on after you do your parathon or whatever.
Paravan, yeah.
Parathon,
definitely would love
it. Paravan to parathon, that's what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, this one will
it's
be
a freaking
the
parathon,
right?
There we go. Print the t-shirts out, put like, you know, Parathon 2014, put all the locations on the back.
Here we go.
That's funny. Actually, that's a good idea.
Hey, man.
Yeah, my idea, as long as you send me a t-shirt.
Right.
All right, well, we'll let you go.
All right, well, thanks again, guys. I appreciate it. Hey, we'll be coming on. You guys take care. All right. Bye-bye.
Have a
good one.
That was fun.
It's very informative. I am actually going to check out that YouTube video on the flashlight.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I've always wondered about that. I've always wondered about, like, if you had the Meg lights loose, so loose like that, just want you wondering if it's just a coincidence that they go on and off at the same time. I know a lot of people use them and have had good results with them.
Well, that makes me wonder, though, if like a Mag light or the little LED lights that you normally use when you're, you know, going around and seeing things, how a flashlight session would differ between that and using one of the magnetic coil ones that you have to wind up.
That's true.
I haven't really
thought about that, to be honest with you. But, yeah, I mean, I guess that's your point.
That just kind of, like, popped into my head.
Yeah, that's a great point there, Kristen. I mean, I like that, you know.
I mean, you know, who's to say that one is better than the other?
That's just like that tutorial where the questions that we had to answer.
Yeah.
How my brain just kind of branched off for personal experience. I was like, well, then, of course, you also have your Phillips effect. And my brain just went off in 3 or 4 different branches. And I was like, thank you for making my brain work. Crap.
Well, there you go. I mean, good.
It's good that you can think outside the box like that. That way you can actually try to use that as a piece and see if that works or whatever. Yeah.
I'm going to go invest in a magnetic light now.
There we go. And I think she has a good point. She's a Tony Plant for the
very educational,
week.
Very informative.
Yes, she was. Yes, she was. Do we have any big plans to get your car fixed?
I'm hopefully going to be getting the transmission by like tomorrow or Wednesday morning and getting it in. Because, it crapped out. And, I was stuck in downtown Chesterfield. Well, not really downtown Chesterfield, but out there, like, not even a mile and a half away from Chesterfield Auto Parts. Because I went to check to see if that was a manual or an automatic. And lo and behold, it was an automatic because somebody didn't want to go out there and check for me. So, tomorrow, I get to rip my car apart. Hello? Did you go on mute?
Yeah, no. No, my phone cut off.
Huh?
Oh, yeah. Sorry about my phone cut off.
Oh.
So sorry about that.
You left me hanging just talking to nothing but air. How could you?
Hey. Hey, man, I hit a dead spot or something. All of a sudden, I look at my phone. I'm like, hello? I look at my phone. There's a picture of Rihanna there. I'm like, oh crap. Shit. So I had to go back. call the number.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Real quick. Damn. All right. Well, it's almost about time for us to end the show. Play a little Tears for Fears out of here. Hope everyone has a good night. Hope they enjoyed the show. Kristen, hope you get your car fixed.
I hope I get my car fixed, too.
Yeah, I know it sucks being stuck at home. And it, my Shannon's got her radiator. It's busted. So she's been borrowing my car and, you know, needing rides to work and stuff like that. Borrowing her mom's car. I know it sucks.
Yeah.
You know. But when are you supposed to be getting your transmission?
Like I said, tomorrow or Wednesday morning.
Okay. Cool deal.
Jimmy said he helped me put it in. So, like I said, I'll go ahead and I'll get the easy part done and rip my car apart to where we can just pop it out and then pop the other one back in.
Oh, that's nice. It's good. It's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely good to have someone here. Who can work on cars?
Sometimes.
That's true. So, all right, well, I am running out of stuff to talk about. My brain is shutting down as we speak. So
well,
I'm going to
chat and just say that I'm getting my clothes off the clothesline now.
You're doing what now?
I've been waiting a whole 2 hours so I can walk over here and get my clothes off of the clothesline, take them inside.
Oh, I thought you said you're taking your clothes off right now. I'm like, what the hell?
Oh like, yes, baby.
I'm running out of stuff to talk about. This talk, holy shit. Damn. That wasn't what I had in mind, but okay.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah.
That's right. Brown chicken, brown cow. Oh yeah.
Brown chicken, brown cow.
This
what?
This show has gone in a total different direction. On that note,
we went from supernatural and paranormal education to somebody taking their clothes off.
Exactly, man. That's right. Live on air. Woo. All right. On that note, it's time for us to end the show. I'm going to say good night to all the fast maniacs out there.
Good night,
Kristen. Bye, Kristen.
Bye, Ryan.
I'll talk to you tomorrow. All right. Bye.
All right. Bye.